From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, we look at the biggest intelligence leak in U.S. history as WikiLeaks, an organization dedicated to releasing secret documents, just yesterday released some 250,000 to five media outlets. We'll get reaction and analysis. Then in our second half hour, the United Nations Climate Change Conference Summit opens today in Cancun, Mexico. Attention there will be focused on the future of global action and climate change. Expectations appear to be low. Will we see a replay of Copenhagen, or will we see serious and substantive action taken against what most agree is an all-too-perilous ticking climate change clock? Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. A quarter million confidential U.S. State Department diplomatic cables were made available yesterday to five news organizations by WikiLeaks, revealing secret material and trafficking between the State Department and 276 worldwide embassies and consulates. The majority of the leaked documents were from the past 3 years, and in this first half hour of Forum, we want to discuss what many are calling a serious diplomatic crisis as a result of the leaks. Richard Haass is joining us from New York. He's president of the Council on Foreign Relations. They're a nonpartisan organization that focuses on foreign policy issues, and he was a member of the National Security Council staff for the first President Bush and director of policy planning in the State Department for the second President Bush. Welcome, Richard Haass.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be back.
Good to have you back. Also, Joseph Nye joins us this morning from Lexington, Massachusetts, former dean of the Kennedy School at Harvard and author of a new book called The Future of Power. Welcome, Joseph Nye.
Nice to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Richard Haass, let me begin with you because I just want sort of your overview of this. Here's secret information, confidential names being revealed, and it's being called a diplomatic crisis and devastating. How much does this really threaten U.S. security and endanger our personnel? And frankly, how much does it actually affect diplomacy?
Well, with what we've seen so far, and we obviously don't know what we haven't seen, I would not call it a crisis. Most of what I've read largely confirms what it is we already thought. You didn't have to read WikiLeaks to know that the Afghan government is extraordinarily corrupt. You didn't need WikiLeaks to know that many of the Arab leaders are more worried, say, about Iran than they are about Israel. You certainly didn't need WikiLeaks to know that the Prime Minister of Italy is a man of, shall we say, uncertain scruples and morals. So I'm not going to sit here, Michael, and say this doesn't cause problems in some cases, for example, with Pakistan over nuclear issues or with Yemen over counterterrorism. There are some revelations that I think will make it more, not less, difficult to cooperate with governments. And I'm not going to say this probably didn't ruin Hillary Clinton's weekend. I expect she was on the phone with any number of foreign ministers and heads of state, essentially preparing them for what was to come and essentially giving them the bad news that some unflattering depictions were about to end up on the front page of their newspapers. But when I compare this, and I'd be interesting to hear what Joe Nye has to say, with something like the Pentagon Papers, I don't think this is nearly as serious because what we're largely seeing are tidbits that are consistent with U.S. policy rather than something that was secret, which is antithetical to the thrust of U.S. foreign policy.
And yet, Joseph Nye, there were diplomats who were used to spy on the U.N. There were State Department employees who were told to get hold of credit cards and frequent flyer numbers and schedules and personal data of foreign officials. This all seems pretty serious to me.
Well, I basically agree with Richard in the sense that there are serious aspects of it, but there's nothing that's earth-shaking. If I ask, having read through several papers and their accounts, how was my mind changed on anything, or did the scales fall from my eyes on anything because of this? The answer is no. But there are some embarrassing details, some of which Richard mentioned. There's also a cable between Secretary of Defense Gates and the French Secretary of Defense or Defense Minister, in which the French minister tells what he said to the Turkish Prime Minister. And that's got to have a negative effect on people's willingness to discuss frankly with each other. As for the details about spying, my understanding from what I read on this is that there are all points bulletins that go out from of the State Department that are allegedly signed. Well, they're signed by the Secretary of State because she clears all cables, but they could have been sent by fairly low-level people just saying, get more information. It's not clear that how much of this was traditional spying. Most of this is what's called in the intelligence community open-source information. I mean, stuff that's not classified by the other governments or organizations. So it's most of this is embarrassment, but not something like the Pentagon Papers, as Richard said.
Well, Richard Haass, is it overstated then when the White House says that lives are endangered as a result of this and it deeply affects, I'm quoting directly from the White House, deeply affects foreign policy?
Well, two things. They know that, which something we don't, which presumably they know some of the other cables which are in the hands of WikiLeaks that perhaps have not seen the light of day. And depending upon whether names or other specific details are removed, the declassification or release of these documents could have real consequences. Secondly, it's maybe something of a stretch, but maybe not when you look at a situation like Yemen. What you've had is the United States acting there, and you have the president of Yemen essentially saying, we know it's your missiles, but we're going to keep telling our own people that we ourselves are doing this work militarily, the reason being that it's more acceptable for the government of Yemen to be taking counter-terrorist steps than to have it be known in their own country that it's the United States doing its dirty work for them. And if this makes it more difficult for us to take these sorts of counter-terrorist actions in the future, then yes, this could have some significant consequences.
Well, we did find out, for example, Joseph Nye, that Qatar is really the worst in the region when it comes to counter-terrorism. We also found out that the Saudis are still the chief financiers of Al-Qaeda. I mean, these are facts that sort of shift perspectives. The Saudis are our good friends and they're financing Al-Qaeda or continuing to finance Al-Qaeda?
Well, we've known for some time, it's been in the American press and elsewhere, that many Saudi wealthy Saudis were financing Al-Qaeda. That has diminished over time compared to what it was before 2001. But that there still are some problems, yes, that comes out in this. As for Qatar, they've played a game in which they give America an air base but don't crack down too hard on terrorists so that they can curry favor with us and also at the same time not put themselves too much on the wrong side of the more radical movements in the Arab world. This kind of playing both sides of the street by a small state, after all, they're only about they're less than a million people who are citizens of Qatar. It's not too surprising. I mean, and I don't think it was a great surprise to read that, but that it comes out in the open makes it much more embarrassing to the Emir of Qatar and to King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia. I think that the real danger is that countries may be less willing to cooperate with us quietly now that they know these things can be leaked so easily. For example, there's a case of in one of the cables of the American ambassador in Pakistan, Ann Patterson, going in and asking permission to help get highly enriched uranium out of a research reactor in Pakistan. And when that kinds of thing comes out in the press, it just becomes impossible for the local government to cooperate.
We've also got the revelation that China was actually trying to launch cyber attacks on the United States, specifically on Google.
Well, again, the fact that China and Google have been at loggerheads for some time is widely known. And the fact that there's individuals in China who are launching, as you describe it, cyber attacks, again, is well known. So, again, that did not surprise me. Can I just make one other point, Michael, which is building on what Joe Nye said. I think the other potential cost of this is not simply the willingness of foreign officials to work with their American counterparts. I think he's right when he says it will be somewhat diminished, at least for a while. It's also what Americans themselves are prepared to put in cable. So, for example, you do have the situation when the American ambassador in Islamabad in Pakistan said certain things. The cable was sent into Washington. Well, if you're an American ambassador and you've got something sensitive, What this will do is perhaps make you think, gee, maybe I shouldn't put it in a cable. Instead, I'll pick up the phone and call someone in Washington. That's bad for policymaking. You actually need things that are written down that can be read and thought about by the right people if the decision-making process is going to have some depth and some rigor and some integrity. And I worry that this sort of thing will make people even more adverse to putting things down on paper. And in my experience, policymaking, which is done without people writing and thinking and reading, it tends to be much worse in its execution.
Richard Haass with us from New York is president of the Council on Foreign Relations. By the way, you can join the program if you have some thoughts about the WikiLeaks revelations that have come out. We're talking about the fallout from the recent release of more than 250,000 classified State Department cables. Your calls are welcome. I'd also certainly like to hear not only your responses, but also thoughts about just how WikiLeaks is operating. We know who Julian Assange is, but we don't know the cast of characters here, although certainly names have been revealed of high diplomatic sources and people in the State Department, and their anonymity has not exactly been protected. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us now. This is a half-hour segment, so if you have something you'd like to bring to the table here, by all means, call now. It's 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And Joseph Nye, what about the whole question of accountability here? It seems like there's going to be a court-martial against a private for the last batch of cables. But in terms of WikiLeaks being held accountable or...
Well, what's been disclosed so far, it looks like the source for these cables, these State Department cables, may be the same source of a lower-level Army private. He mentions those way back last spring, that he has 250,000 State Department cables, so that may be the source. WikiLeaks, which I don't defend, I think you can't do serious diplomacy the way WikiLeaks is making the world operate. But they did provide it to some papers and have not just dumped it all out in a form which is endangering lives quite as much as they did on the last set. But I think there have been changes inside WikiLeaks, which some people have resigned, and Julian Assange, the Australian head of WikiLeaks, is now somewhat criticized internally. So there's change going on inside WikiLeaks. And strictly speaking, the disclosure of classified information by the Army private is an illegal action. I think the big danger that I see is after 9/11, we said, oh, we need to share more information within the U.S. government. We need to connect the dots. Well, now, after this, there's going to be less willingness to connect dots. There'll not only be the problem that Richard mentioned, that people won't put things in writing, but people are not going to share what they have in writing. And that makes for the kinds of problems that got us into 9/11.
Although it's my understanding, Richard Haass, that there are three categories. There's secret, and then there's foreign policy. In other words, cables that are not supposed to be revealed to the world, so to speak. And then there are top secret cables which have not been disseminated or are not part of the WikiLeaks?
Batch does not include top secret cables. And what makes a cable top secret usually has less to do with the content, though that can do it. Usually it's how the information is obtained, so-called sources and methods. So, you know, and as bad as this situation is in some cases, obviously it could have been worse. And again, though, there's not much you can do about it. Unlike Britain, where it's not simply illegal to disclose illegal classified information, it's also illegal to publish it under the Official Secrets Act. We don't have the equivalent in this country. Here, the full brunt falls on those who illegally disclose information. It's their responsibility to keep it secret. And organizations, whether it's the New York Times or a television network or WikiLeaks, there you have to simply appeal to their discretion, their patriotism, their good judgment. And on some cases, I've had this experience as a former policymaker. I've persuaded people not to go ahead and publish something, or at least to change what they'd publish to protect certain types of intelligence or something that was very sensitive diplomatically. And you know, obviously, in this case, most of it is going to come out, though, again, one hopes that WikiLeaks at least exercises a modicum of responsibility so people are not put at risk and so sources do not dry up.
Let me go to our callers, and we'll begin. Howard, with you. Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you. I'm one citizen who is in favor of this WikiLeaks revealing these government things because I don't agree with the government's policy. I think that the government is becoming more and more secretive. And I think this is a great counter to that. As relatively benign as it is, I think it's a great thing. The comments that apply to Mr. Assange and WikiLeaks that your guests are expressing would apply equally to the Pentagon Papers, and I certainly was in favor of that. I agree with WikiLeaks. And I, as a citizen, I don't trust my government anymore. I do not agree with the policies that are. I don't agree with the increasing militarization of this this government and increasing secrecy. So I'm in favor of this.
All right. We thank you for that call, and we'll go right to another caller and find out what some more of you think. Tom is with us. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Great show, and thanks for taking my call. I think this whole thing is more about blackmail a la J. Edgar Hoover. It's a money-making scheme or organized crime, you know, like the Prime Minister of Italy and all those Piccadillos and so on. I don't think Manning would release or search out 250,000 or more diplomatic cables if he's interested in foreign policy bombshells. I mean, just one or two foreign policy bombshells, like the weapons of mass destruction, for example, would be enough to make a political point. So I don't think he's trying to make any political point. It was all about looking for people to blackmail and maybe even governments.
Well, what do you think, Joseph Nye, the specter of blackmail here?
I have no idea what was in the minds of the private who disclosed this. I mean, he claims that he was in a explained why the rich countries exploited the poor countries, but it's a lot of that that's disclosed doesn't have much to do with that. I don't see how it actually provides him much of a case for blackmail either.
Well, here's one of our listeners, Bradley, who sends in an email, who sends in an email saying Bradley Manning is a traitor and should spend a long, long time in jail, and the people in charge of the computer infrastructure he abused should be unceremoniously fired. But he adds, for a political junkie, there's so much fun to read. Then we've got Dave in San Mateo who says, perhaps your guests can clear something up for me. Were these documents really available to 2 to 3 million service people, as mentioned in news sources? If so, how could you possibly hope to keep something secret with millions of people having access? Any country with a decent spy network has seen all these before, if this is true.
I can't confirm that 2 or 3 million people saw them. But I would not be surprised if hundreds of thousands of people saw, if not all of these documents, at least had access to many of them. My hunch is that many of them are not particularly sensitive. But I would expect that after this has happened, you will now have a review of distribution criteria. And there's a trade-off here. You want lots of people to see them in the intelligence world and the policy world and so forth so that they know what's going on. It provides a context for their decisions. On the other hand, you do have to think about the risk of unauthorized release. And obviously, the more people who put their eyeballs on something, the greater the chances that it will get out. Why so many people in the military needed to see things that were largely diplomatic is not clear to me. One of the reasons, by the way, that awfully junior people, say such as a private first class in this instance, who's been charged with this or alleged to have done this, saw it, is that often you need low-level assistance to simply sort through things and get things for their more senior bosses. And so you always have a situation in any government where lots of people who are at fairly low levels in a bureaucracy or organization have access to some extraordinarily sensitive things simply because their bosses need to see them.
And again, Richard Haass heads up the Council on Foreign Relations, and Joseph Nye, former dean of the Kennedy School at Harvard and author of a new book called The Future of Power, I think what I'm hearing from you, Joseph Nye, is there really aren't too many surprises in these cables, at least from what we know so far.
No surprises of a great sort. I mean, there are some details, for example, on Iran and the diplomacy of sanctions on Iran that are interesting. There are also some questions that are issues that have come up about, let's say, how the Yemeni government deliberately misled its people and so forth. I guess that wasn't a big surprise to me, but the starkness of it was was quite interesting. But damage can be done anyway, and the point that I was making, I think Richard was making, is that if you care about a government which shares information broadly to prevent another 9/11, which I think we should, even your first caller who said that he disagreed with government policy, can't think he really disagrees with the idea of preventing another 9/11. What this has done has made it a lot harder to connect the dots, which was what the 9/11 Commission said was missing.
And we go to Bryn, next caller. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question would be, how do we know that the information that was provided by WikiLeaks is accurate? And how do we, I mean, if somebody who will watch politics could easily speculate that information, and how do we know it's not another mind game of the superpowers to create another conflict, an international conflict? I don't believe that the CIA and other Department of State and other political institutions in the United States, they will do such gross mistakes. So I'm being from Europe, I really don't trust this information. I think it's another mind game behind it that we could see the outcome or the result later on.
Some thoughts, so Richard Haass, about maybe something else going on here that we're not seeing?
If I may paraphrase someone else in a different circumstance, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
That's not even a paraphrase. That's a direct quote.
Fair enough. This is just 250,000 documents. I don't think, at least I've not heard any suggestion by the government that they've been doctored in any way. The fact that Hillary Clinton, again, was on the horn getting to various leaders in other governments suggests to me that the U.S. government determined that these were real. And even taking the caller's point at face value, I don't see how the United States benefits from this, to have all this sort of stuff out there, even if it doesn't quite constitute a crisis of the first order, certainly doesn't help. Diplomacy often depends on things being implicit rather than explicit. And to have all this stuff out there on page one of the world's newspapers clearly throws some sand in the gears of diplomacy, of intelligence gathering, of the day-to-day work of government. So I can't for a second imagine why the United States government in any way would want to have seen this happen.
We're coming to the end of the segment, and Joseph Nye, one of our listeners, Kevin, says, could you please explain what is meant by cables? I would have thought that secure encrypted email would be used these days.
Well, a cable is a diplomatic term for a communication which originally used to be sent by telegraph, but now it can be sent by a variety of means. But it is a form which is usually as we see it in the department or saw it, it was a hard copy. And I think that's what is meant by cables. It covers a number of things.
It's a generic term. I'm glad we clarified that. And thank you both for being with us on this segment. Again, Joseph Nye is former dean of the Kennedy School at Harvard and author of The Future of Power. Richard Haass is president of the Council on Foreign Relations and was a member of the National Security Council in both President Bush 1 and President Bush 2 administrations. I'm Michael Krasny.